City Current. Produced by Dakota Media Access. In-depth discussion with Bismarck and Mandan city officials. Watch on Government Access Channel 602 HD or tune in to Radio Access 102.5 FM. Always local, always current.
Hello and welcome to a Bismarck edition of City Current. It's Wednesday, November 13th, and we're here in the studios at Dakota Media Access. I'm here along with, I'm Mary Van Sickle with Dakota Media Access, and I'm with Jason Tomonic again.
Hi, Mary. How are you?
Good. It's a good day. Thanks for coming. It's been a while since you've been in the studio with us.
We skipped last meeting. We had a really short agenda, so we had to call an audible and have a timeout. So thanks for accommodating.
We had a week off. Yep. We could regroup. So, well, thanks for being here. And our purpose, as always, is to talk about the activity of the Bismarck City Commission meeting as of last night. So it was a big agenda, lots of things going on, and there were a few things we wanted to pull and talk about the consent agenda items, even though commissioners did not pull them for discussion. Right. But we just wanted to point out there were a few items, introduction and call for public hearing on the on these items, too. And one of them was a Class P liquor license for the Amvets Club.
Right.
Thought that was interesting. I'm not that familiar with the Class P.
It's not a very common license that we authorize or that we offer. There's only one other organization in town that currently holds a Class P, so it's nice to see that the Amvets are able to pick up the license and, well, assuming everything goes well at the public hearing, obtain the license. But really what this will do is it complements a lot of their activities that are going on within the club. And as many fraternal organizations are experiencing, there's a change happening in these clubs, and they need to adapt to what's going on in the community and what their members are looking for. So this Class P will help them provide that service and some more of the opportunities for, of course, wedding events and dances and things like that is all part of what can go on with the Class P license. So
it's event-oriented. It's not a liquor license in place all times. Just when there's a special event at the building.
Yep. Okay. So for private events where they'll rent out the facility, that Class P license would go into action during those events.
All right. So 2 weeks comes
two weeks
back to
public
the
public hearing. If anybody's got questions or comments, they can always give us a call or certainly come to the meeting and share their concerns during the public hearing.
The next item had to do with benefits for city employees, and we just wanted to pull this out to mention that it's a step forward. You know, bringing up to date their benefits for their employees, and this has to do with sick leave for parents who are adopting a child.
That's part of it. Yep.
Part of it.
Yep. So if you're adopting a child, bringing a child into your family, there's now an accommodation for leave to help with that transitional period, bringing the child in. There's also an additional allowance for caring for immediate family members. So say you have a son or a daughter that is sick and they need an extended care, you can take sick leave from the city, from your job, and then care for your children. It's not intended for visitation, it's intended for actual care of those child. So we're really talking about those unfortunate long-term illnesses and things that can really impact a family.
Absolutely.
So we want to make sure that we're supportive of our staff, and we know that that can be one of the worst times in their family's lives, and we want to make sure that they have a job to come back to once they're able to work through those situations. So,
again, an introduction, call for hearing, 2 weeks, it'll come back to the commission.
You got it.
Okay. The last item under the consent agenda area was is a pretty detailed report that was submitted, and again, this is just the introduction. In 2 weeks, there'll be more discussion on it.
Right.
So it's pretty detailed. And this is an issue that we've talked about in the past. We knew it was under study. It's minimum habitability standards for rental housing units in the within the city of Bismarck.
Exactly what it is. So it's intended to provide some oversight and some inspection opportunities for city staff when rental dwellings are in consideration. This is not meant to get into hospital situations or nursing home facilities or things like that. Those are regulated differently. This is intended for a tenant in a residential dwelling. If there are concerns or problems with that particular dwelling situation, or if there's things that need to be addressed that aren't being looked at by the landlord, this now gives the tenant an opportunity to file a complaint with building inspections or with our environmental health division to look at a multitude of things. And I'm going to cheat with my notes here a little bit because there's quite a list of things that they'll be looking at. Structural integrity of the building, lighting, minimum lighting, course, ventilation, talking about windows and exhaust, plumbing, tub or shower system, kitchen sink. All of these things are minimum standards that need to be in
functioning.
Also looking at mechanical systems, adequate heating, electrical, weatherproofing, so we don't have water infiltrating the building and things like that. Safe means of egress, self-preservation, got to be able to get out of the building. And fire protection and pest elimination. So there's a good variety of things that both building inspections and environmental health can look at and work to enforce if the situation is necessary.
So this is defining some minimum standards in this in all of these areas. And I think the other thing that should be mentioned is this did not happen in a vacuum. This process has included manufactured housing builders, apartment association managers, those types of individuals who are affected by this have been part of the process.
Right. This actually started early in 2019, the conversation with city staff and the commissioners. And back in April of this year, the commissioners heard a brief report at that time and said, you know, we want to make sure we're getting all the feedback we need. Go back and make sure you include the manufactured home park operators, the apartment association, and get their input. This is not intended to scare any property owners. If you're a good property manager, by no means should this be meant as a threat. This is for worst-case scenarios. And, and we've unfortunately heard reports of problems that are in this area.
Generally, the operators are all good people and managing good properties, but all it takes is one violation or one severe situation. And that's what really happened here was there was a complaint and this kind of escalated to this point. And it's good, though. I mean, again, minimum standards.
Commissioner Nancy Guy has been a big part of this conversation from the beginning, so it's nice to know that there is support from the top down. And again, staff won't be going out looking for problems. Staff will be available for a complaint situation. They'll validate whether the complaint is in fact a legitimate concern.
Sure.
Work with the property owner, work with the tenants to try and get these things resolved. And if not, there is a means to require these things to get up to speed.
So point of contact then, if people are going to have issues as this progresses and it's in place, then if a person has a problem with their facility, with their their residence, where do they go? Who do they contact then?
One of two places. They can either go to Building Inspections, which is located downtown in the City County Building on second floor, and Brady Blaskowski is our building official. So Brady would be the point for that enforcement
side. And that's under Community Development.
Under Community Development, yep, second floor. Or Environmental Health, which is located within the Bismarck Burley Public Health Building just down the street from City County. So we're on the corner of 5th and Front there. Antone Sattler is our environmental health administrator, and his team is responsible for inspections of restaurants and swimming pools and other like facilities. But this is also part of his world because it gets involved with infestation, rodents, insects, things of that nature as well. So definitely a team approach here, but something that unfortunately has a need that needs to be addressed in our community, and this is our response to that effort.
Previously, nothing was in place.
Nothing's been on the books to this point. Okay. So if a tenant is having a problem with a landlord and it's in this world, it unfortunately is left for those individuals to work out. The city will...
Which you prefer all the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, sure.
We definitely want that. We're not looking to become the mediator or anything like that. Again, we're not out to try and find these problems. We need to be available when these situations arise.
Again, minimum standards.
Right.
And some enforcement and some teeth to it in case they can't work it out.
Yep. So in 2 weeks, public hearing, anybody, both sides, you know, for or against concerns or other comments, please feel free to come and share your thoughts at the public hearing in 2 weeks.
Okay. And we'll talk about it again at that point. Mm-hmm. So thank you. We'll move into the regular agenda. Commissioner Oban had his report last night. Mm-hmm. He rotated different commissioners and the mayor to report on their portfolios. And I always want to bring up Commissioner Obans because he is our liaison on our board of directors here at Dakota Media Access. So, but he did talk about the police department, some updates on that. But, you know, again, we come back to us. And it was nice to have him report on an event that we just did. And that was the Film Dash, a version that we do at this fall season. It was called the Horror Film Dash that we had at Dakota Stage that really... again, kind of extends the mission of whole media making. And we had 11 local teams making films that were shown that evening, and Commissioner O'Bannon and his daughter attended, so that was nice. And he had a couple of photos to share that they had taken that night. But he also talked about another a project that we're working on right now, and that is a new program that we're collaborating with Renee Mock, director at Public Health here, a new program called One-on-One with Public Health. So we've been working on this with Renee for a while, and we're just about ready to send out those episodes and segments that we're recording over at Public Health. So that was kind of nice that Commissioner O'Bannon also talked about that a little bit too.
Yeah,
so
that's great. In both worlds, it's nice that Public Health has an opportunity to share this information, and it's always great that you guys are willing to host and
Well, there's a lot going on
that.
Over there, and people just don't realize how much public health is influencing what's happening in the community and our health in our community. Mm-hmm. So we want to help them get their message out. So look forward to that, and we'll distribute those online. They'll be distributing those on their website. Those segments will all be available as well. And then obviously on our cable channels, we'll send those out. So that was nice. Also last night, Jeff Heinz came forward, Public Works Director, and talked about the flood protection update. I think everybody's thinking about water right now.
It is a topic that we're talking about. I know the Water Resource District talked about it this morning at their meeting, and we're having conversations internally. Of course, the Army Corps of Engineers is well aware of what's going on, and they're providing regular updates, which we are very much a part of, and listening in on the information that they're sharing.
So Jeff brought forward last night and just reviewed the update that was done in 2015. I'm pointing to my computer screen right here and just showing you the pop up the front page there. And this report was, again, put together in 2015. Jeff went walk through this again, and it's still current. And this is what they're going on. Should we be addressing flood issues again in the spring?
Yeah, the plan was developed, of course, after the 2009 ice jam event and then the 2011 open water flood, which, of course, lasted several weeks, a couple months through our community. So there have been a number of permanent improvements that have been put in place as a result of this plan, seeing some of the weaknesses along the flood protection lines. And then there are some temporary things that this plan addresses that, if the need would arise, Jeff calls them like a blister pack or a series of sandbags in key areas to make sure that those elevations are at a set height above the water levels to make sure that we can continue to use, you know, the roadway network and of course, protect homes. We're also talking about the protection of city infrastructure, not just the street network, but the water and sewer system, the street lights. I mean, it goes on and on and on. So there's a high degree of concern for any overland flooding, obviously. But this plan was developed to address all of the needs that we saw in both 2009 and in 2011. As Jeff shared with us last night, the ice jam situation can happen very quickly without a lot of indication. And there isn't a ton of things that we can do other than to be prepared and be responsive as possible. So that is something that we will certainly be paying close attention to as we get into the spring.
Well,
lots of winter months.
Unpredictability in this area. And as you mentioned, Water Resource Council had their live meeting this morning, and I was listening to that. And they're also talking about flood protection in the spring. So it was a lot of similar reporting going on there. Also, Michelle Closey last night was talking about the groundwater saturation levels, and that the month of September, at least here in Bismarck, was the highest accumulation of rainfall in 125 years. Yeah. So that's something you can't predict, and we don't know what's going to happen with snow here and snow to the west in the mountains. All that runoff affects us. So, lots of unpredictability. But I thought a couple of common threads between the meeting last night and today, and that was flood insurance. That came up last night. There was a recommendation that the homeowners in these areas should really be looking into this area right now. Some of it's fairly affordable. I know that when we lived downtown, we actually had flood insurance in for just our basement. And it was pretty affordable, and it was worth getting at that time. I think that probably remains now. The other common thread between the two meetings was sump pumps and having a way to get that water out of the building, out of your home, not just an interior sump pump that's going into the floor drain.
Right.
And I think that's really good advice. And I think it was Mayor Bakken who brought that up last night, that people should really be looking at that.
And Michelle did note that we are seeing higher flows through the wastewater treatment system right now, which means people that are using their sump pumps and they are pumped into their sanitary sewer system, that water ultimately goes through the water treatment plant before it's discharged into the river.
Sure.
Which is a typical thing when we have winter months. Obviously, you can't daylight your groundwater out onto the street in the wintertime. It's going to cause all sorts of trouble. But when we see higher flows coming through the wastewater treatment system, then that there's a higher cost to treat all of that water as well. So
if you, and if it's necessary for you to put a plug in your basement drain, and this is all happening, where is your sump pump has to go out?
Yep.
So, yeah, these are things to think about now rather than in the spring.
Yep. And unfortunately, groundwater is really out of our control. You know, Commissioner Zenker mentioned it last night as well, with the saturations that we've had with the high water levels and the sandy soil systems that we have on the south side of town. All these things are lining up right now into high groundwater. And we know it's a fact. It water moves around throughout the community. But unfortunately, there isn't much that we can do to help alleviate that other than just be prepared and get your pumps running.
Well, and again, the plan is in place. It is available at bismarcknd.gov.
Absolutely.
You can talk to you or Jeff Hines at Public Works if you have questions. But take a look at the plan, especially if you live in these areas. Probably be best to be forewarned and have the knowledge before we get into that situation.
And the commission noted that, and actually we had a resident from the Southport area speak up during the public comment portion of the meeting at the onset of the meeting. And with those comments and the concerns that are out there, the commission directed staff, primarily Jeff and Michelle and some of us that are in that that frontline discussion, to meet with those residents in the Southport area and the residents that are up along the Riverwood Golf Course area, because of course they experience water as it comes, you know, through some of those backwater channels. So we'll be looking at, you know, probably early next year, early 2020, to get everybody together and make sure that for anybody that wasn't here in 2011, you know, let them know that we do have a plan to address some of these things and just give them some confidence that we've been through this, and certainly we can't guarantee anything, but we want people to know that we do have an action plan. There are some very measured steps that we will take as the water, if the water continues to rise, and just let people know that we have been through this, and we hope to be able to come through anything that comes forward in the future, and we're paying attention. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think Jeff mentioned as well that the Corps of Engineers will be having another update with him, with their department, sometime in February,
right.
So then after that, Jeff will be reporting back to the commission.
Right, and one thing different this year than in years past, the Corps of Engineers won't be just looking at snowpack, but they'll also be looking at groundwater content as the spring runoff comes through. So there may be a better understanding of the amount of water that would come through the system, but of course we'll
how it will affect property owners.
We will be listening very closely to those meetings and being a part of those conversations and responding accordingly when we have information that is valuable to us.
Okay.
So
sounds good. You'll be watching it.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
Gabe Schell, your city engineer, kind of rounded out the end of the meeting, but he had a lot going on.
He did. A lot of projects.
And this is more of an annual event where he comes forward with these concepts that are going to match up with some DOT funding.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we've seen it in the past, but obviously all different projects this year.
Right.
And these projects also move through the Metropolitan Planning Organization. These don't just, Gabe isn't sitting in his office putting a wish list together. These are projects that have gone through a vetting process with the MPO already.
Yep.
And they've authorize them as priority projects. So they match up with some of the DOT plans and the funding that's available through the state and some of federal dollars as well.
Right.
Yeah. So this is a bit of a challenge. We've got a few maps to throw up on the screen
here. Like engineers here.
We will. The first group of projects he talked about were the urban road, the urban regional, and the urban grant programs. And I know that Lloyd's going to do his best to give us some maps here. And one of those projects that was identified and by the way, the commission approved
all of these projects.
Went forward to go ahead and refine and submit for funding. So they will move forward. This one is a trail system.
Exactly. So this is along State Street between Calgary Avenue all the way up to Skyline Boulevard. So this would be picking up where the current trail ends and then providing a pedestrian and bicycle route along the west side of State Street until we get to 43rd Avenue, and then crossing over at 43rd Avenue to the east side, and then tying in with Skyline Boulevard on the north. So for anybody that's walking along the State Street corridor, we see you. We're concerned about you. We want to give you a place where you can be safe, riding your bike or walking or whatever the case may be. This would help get people from a primarily residential area along the south and up into that commerce area where you see the North Walmart and Hay Creek Shops and some of those other restaurants and other activities.
Yeah.
We've experienced people walking along this highway, essentially, and it's not something that we really encourage, but we understand people have places they need to get.
There's no alternative up there right now, so this is really needed. I see this as well, and there's certainly some hotels along this corridor as well that you see, you know, visitors that are just trying to get to a restaurant to walk rather than use a vehicle to get there. So that I have seen this too.
Typically, it's would see a sidewalk or a trail network coming in with what we call an urbanized section. So this is a portion of Highway 83 or State Street, depending on how you want to refer to it, that does not have curb and gutter. So it's what we would refer to as a rural ditch section. Oftentimes in those situations, there isn't a great place to put a sidewalk, but this project will ensure that there is a multi-use trail along one side of the roadway network to at least help people get north and south through the corridor.
Yeah. And do we have a timeline on this, Jason?
I believe everything is being looked at for next year.
Okay. All right. So the next project that, and I think we have a map of that. Yep. There you go. Is the Bismarck Expressway, also a sidewalk project from 18th Street to Burlington Drive.
Right.
So I understand. It's a little fuzzy picture, but
running along
gives you an idea.
The north side of Expressway. And again, here we're trying to connect pedestrians with places they want to be. And you think about the east side of this corridor on 26th Street, there's another Walmart, another retail center on that side. We've got a number of businesses along Expressway. The post office is in there as well, the sorting center for the United States Postal Service. So again, another area where we know pedestrians and bicycles want to be, but we just haven't been able to provide those facilities. So this is another valid, warranted project where we can get people from point A to point B more safely than we are right now.
Yeah. A third project in this area was also on the Bismarck Expressway, the East Bismarck Expressway. It's a concrete pavement plan. Yeah. This would be going from the interchange up at I-94 south
down to just about to Main Avenue where they connect. And so this would be much like what Century Avenue was done in this most recent construction season, where they're pulling out panels or portions of the roadway and improving that concrete to make sure that it drives neatly, it drives safely, and we're addressing all the maintenance needs on the roadway network. So certainly a high volume of cars that are moving through this corridor at a high rate of speed. So if this project does move forward, obviously there will need to be some safety concerns addressed with motorists and construction workers and all of those things. But
and Gabe mentioned that this could possibly be connected to this interchange that's being considered by the Federal Highway Department.
DOT is looking at a way to better handle the traffic at exit 161. And for anybody that lives in the northeast side of our community in the morning, they can speak firsthand to the congestion that happens at least twice a day in this area. But it's not as simple as just plopping in a new interchange either. There's a lot of alternatives. There's a lot of different design considerations that the Federal Highway and the North Dakota DOT need to consider. And they were kind enough to offer us an opportunity to share our concerns with traffic movements. We've got a fire station in this neighborhood as well. And a good portion of residential to the north. So a lot of these projects have a lot of players, a lot of moving parts, and we always appreciate the opportunity to have a seat at the table and share our concerns with other agencies that are working on these things.
The next project in this area was University Drive, so we're flipping over to a little different area, and this has to do with 1804 Mill, an overlay of the expressway to Burley Avenue.
Right.
So this is just kind of a maintenance
job. Yep. Kind of. We'd be looking at the area along University Drive, along Lincoln Oaks. You've got Cottonwood Park in that general vicinity on the south side of town. So for the most part, this is a two-lane road as you get further south, but obviously four lanes on the north end, and another busy corridor bringing people in and out of our community routinely. So
the last map in this area has to do with downtown Bismarck, and this is redoing some of the properties downtown or the roads downtown.
Yep. Some of the I shouldn't say original, but older concrete streets.
Some of them look like they're original.
Some of them have been here
condition.
For decades. So we've got a plan over the next couple of years to do 4th, 5th and portions of 6th Street, and then also significant portions of Broadway and Thayer.
Mm-hmm.
This map just shows the two different years that those will be looked at.
Okay.
And this is part of, I believe, the Urban Roads Grant Program, because we're talking about the interior urban part of our community. So looking at a cost share here as well. Many of the streets downtown are concrete, so again, we'd be talking about that panel replacement. But as you're well aware, we've got some banged up curbs and we've got some pedestrian ramps that need to be updated. So all of that would be looked at with this project.
Two colors are indicated on this map, Jason. Which one is first?
I believe the magenta will be first. So that would be 4th Street, 5th Street, and Broadway between 4th and 6th.
Okay.
I believe that's first in the queue. And then Thayer and 6th between Main and Rosser would
okay.
be the second year.
All right.
And we're looking at a 2021 and 2022
okay.
construction timeline
okay.
for these projects,
so not
if
next
I remember
summer
correct.
For this one. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
All right.
And anytime we're doing projects downtown, we've learned from other communities, and we certainly know from past experience, so much of downtown is pedestrian-oriented. Parking is usually a challenge for a lot of people. So when we do projects in this urban core, we need to be very mindful of the business owners' needs, the pedestrian needs, the okay. shoppers' needs, and all of these things. So we'll be working very closely with a lot of the downtown merchants and business owners to make sure that we're handling this as best we can.
Right.
We're not talking about complete sidewalk removal and some of those things we've seen other cities do, but we do know that any work we're doing does disrupt what people are used to.
Sure.
And so we'll have to work collectively to make sure we can get through this together.
Yeah. Yeah, there'll be a lot of public meetings, I'm sure, and talking with the property owners and
Definitely.
The businesses downtown of how do you maintain access into these businesses
right.
during these periods of construction.
Are we looking at work during the nighttime hours instead of daytime hours to fit that? You know, everything's
yeah.
on the table at this point, so lots of ideas will
okay.
be talked about and discussed, and we'll make sure that we get the best project.
And you
forward.
And I will talk about them again.
I'm
here.
Sure
I'm
we
sure
will.
Before
we'll have
this
some,
even moves
some live
forward.
Action shots at some
so,
point.
Yeah. There you go. Just want to talk about the highway safety funding project, too, that Gabe is proposing.
Mm-hmm.
Those are very interesting. And the first one has to do with, I believe we have a map that shows Bismarck Expressway again. Is this the area we're in here?
Right. So we're near the penitentiary, the part of Expressway where it crosses over the Burlington Northern Railroad. And then as it travels north and connects into Main Avenue. So another busy corridor, another multi-lane roadway system that's carrying high volumes of traffic.
What would it be doing in this area? What's the change?
I believe it's maintenance,
okay.
again, maintenance work as well. This portion is primarily asphalt, so I think we're looking at a mill and an overlay and some improvements along the way.
Okay. And then, so the other part of the highway safety funding project proposed had to do with school signage
right.
and implementing, and this is on the heels of a study that was done
mm-hmm.
last year, I believe,
mm-hmm.
That identified some of our schools, our public schools in the area that are having some traffic issues
right.
and fast traffic and needing to slow down people. And this is a proposed sign system that could be implemented in that area.
Right. It's
those
a,
areas.
It's a pedestrian-actuated rapid flashing beacon. So really what that means is if a pedestrian or a bicyclist comes up to the crosswalk, they must first push the button. And then the button indicates that, or it activates the lighting system. And the lights are more than just a flashing bulb like you'd see at some intersections. This is more along the lines of the type of flashing light you would see on a safety vehicle, like a tow truck or somebody, a maintenance crew that's working on the side of the road. The intent is to capture the driver's attention only for that period of time that someone is using the crosswalk.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, the signs are just simply day glow signs that sit primarily dormant. But you'll see these in areas where we do have a good concentration of pedestrians crossing the street to get to schools. We currently have one that was recently installed late this summer up on North Washington Street at Durango. So that helps the kids at Horizon and Liberty Elementary get to and from where they need to be going.
So there was a number of signs. I can't remember the exact number that he proposed.
I
want to
say it was
few.
12 or 15
yeah.
signs. They're
yeah.
they're scattered throughout the community, but again, they're in those areas where we have the potential for pedestrian vehicle conflicts based on
right.
the number of vehicles.
And they're more than just a static sign, obviously, as you explained.
Right.
We've got a flashing light that'll hopefully
yeah.
get the
capture
attention
the
of
attention.
Motorists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we have a map that indicates the potential locations for these signs that they've already identified. Is
right. Right. Yeah. So around Bismarck High School, we know that's definitely a need with the one ways, 7th and 9th Street. Gabe talked about that last night. Yeah. You can see all the way south down in the Solheim area, Dorothy Moses, all the way up into, it looks like even the Northridge neighborhood as well. So throughout the community, it looks like even up in the far northwest at Horizon, which would be the Ash Cooley crossing. You get kids coming from the neighborhood to the south. They're crossing Ash Cooley to get to the Horizon Middle School. So again, safety for pedestrians, safety for anybody using the crosswalks. And we really hope that this project gets the funding it needs to make sure that we get these things implemented.
Yeah. I think Gabe suggested that the cost of the signage would go into the program and that the city would pick up the labor to install.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we've got a great team at the sign shop within Public Works that can handle this type of stuff. And obviously there's some electrical that would need to be done. I believe some of these are even solar powered. They've got the panel on them to charge the battery system. So if you don't have electricity in the vicinity,
makes sense.
You can at least get some power to them for when it's needed.
So will these any of these projects be coming back to the commission? They gave approval for them last night. If the funding is captured and they're approved for funding, they'll just move forward?
Typically, yes. We might see a report from Gabe or Public Works saying, here's the projects that were awarded, here's the projects that we're moving forward. But as far as any other commission consent or approval, I don't believe anything
unless
would be necessary.
Unless there's changes or major changes to cost or design. Yep. I would assume.
Something would be different. But otherwise, it should be pretty straightforward from here.
All right. Well, I think we captured most of the stuff from last night. So
nice job.
We're done, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
I'll be here.
Thanks, Jason.
Thanks, Mary.
And thank you for tuning in to this edition of City Current.
For more information on what was discussed in this episode of City Current, visit bismarcknd.gov or call 701-355-1300. If you have suggestions, comments, or issues you would like addressed in future episodes, contact us at info@freetv.org. This program airs on Government Access, Channel 2 and 602 in HD, or on Radio Access 102.5 FM. It's also available as a podcast on radioaccess.org and as a video viewing link at freetv.org. Thanks for tuning in to this edition of City Current.